gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. Experience the power of one voice on the Outlet Radio Network at www.outletradio.com. Featuring community talk, news, and music from independent broadcasters.
It was fun this morning in the shower when you punched me in the windpipe and took my candy cigarette.
One network, one voice. The power of one. The Outlet Radio Network.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to another fabulous edition of the Tea Party. Tonight we'll be having special guest, Christine Beatty. Christine Beatty. And we'll get to your news on this edition of the Tea Party. Welcome, everyone, to this fabulous, what is it, Tuesday night edition of the Tea Party. God, it's been a busy week already. Well, I'm going to switch to music, and we'll get to talking about the latest in trans news. Welcome to the Tea Party. You can come into the chat room. You can go to www.transsisterradio.com. That's TransSisterRadio.com. And you can join Becky and I in chat. And we can talk about the transgender news. Yay! First thing I'd like to talk about tonight is the news of Baltimore. This is from Baltimore. The Baltimore Sun. It was published today. The city council passed a bill last night outlawing discrimination based on gender identity and expression. And or expression, exactly. Passed without debate, the bill makes Baltimore the nation's 53rd locality or state to explicitly prohibit discrimination against transsexuals, according to Lisa Moddet, a lawyer for the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force Transgendered Civil Rights Project. Boston, Philadelphia, New York passed similar measures this year, she said. The city has previously outlawed discrimination based on the basis of race, color, religion, national origin, ancestry, sex, marital status, physical or mental disability, and sexual orientation. Supporters said it was important to add gender identity or expression because transsexuals face immense discrimination. Some girls just have to do what they have to do to earn a living, but the majority of us have jobs, said Terry Johnson, 29, of Charles Village. She said she's tired of police assuming that she's a prostitute because she is a transsexual and hopes the bill will help. So that's good. I'm really excited about that because that is like 45 minutes away from me. So I'm really excited about that. I mean, that's great news. From Baltimore, that's great. And this comes from Ontario, the Sun-Times. Okay. Now, the next two stories are going to be about schools. And this is very, very, very interesting. This is from Ontario, as I said. A new human rights policy for Blue Water Schools tries to clearly define and discourage discrimination and harassment against gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender teachers, students, or anyone else with the public school system. School boards must institute clear and effective policies with regard to discrimination. those who run the educational system are obligated to make sure these students feel safe and comfortable so they can learn to the best of their abilities. The policy now goes to both secondary and elementary principals and will be circulated in January and February to school parent councils for comment for the final approval sometime next spring. Jim 2, welcome to the chat room. You can come into the chat room by going to transistorradio.com and click on interact and then hit chat. You can join Jim, Becky, and I. This next story comes from Tucson, Arizona. That bastion of liberalism. This story is about a Wilson teacher under investigation for inviting speaker without clearance. Ooh. Oh, that was a good drink. I am not getting drunk on the air, by the way. A Amphi school district teacher is under investigation for inviting a certain speaker to talk to middle schoolers without the permission of the administration or parental consent. The principal at Wilson says last Friday, a member from the group Wingspan came to about 6th, 7th, and 8th graders. Wingspan is a group which supports the gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered community. Now, school officials want to know why they did not know about the presentation beforehand and exactly what those students were told. Kindergarten through 8th grade students at Wilson School study pretty basic curriculum, but on Friday, 58, 6th, 7th, and 8th graders received an unexpected lesson on a pretty controversial issue: gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgendered lifestyles. First of all, it's not a fucking lifestyle, you asswipes. A lifestyle is like if you're rich. So, to all of you that think it's a lifestyle, try becoming gay and live the gay lifestyle instead of the heterosexual lifestyle. That's so fucking ridiculous. It says that Smith says the teacher made an error in judgment. The administration would have placed restrictions upon that speaker if the speaker had been allowed to speak at all. Wingspan executive director. Ooh, we have a call. Hello, you're on Transistor Radio's Marty's Tea Party.
And this is your favorite transistor, Christine.
Hey! For everybody that doesn't know, Christine Beatty is here with us tonight for a fabulous interview. I was just talking about the news and about some stupid teachers and... I was just about to finish, actually. So I'm all done. I was just going to bitch about...
What are these stupid teachers doing now?
Oh, Lord. Well, I talked about one article from Ontario where basically this school is going in and they're supporting... and they're trying to discourage discrimination and harassment against the GLBT teachers, students... or anyone else in the school system. Well, you turn around and the same type of thing, only this is in Tucson, Arizona. The school district is harassing a teacher that brought in someone from Wingspan, which is a group that, and it even says in the article, it says, they received an unexpected lesson on a pretty controversial issue: gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender, and I put this in quotes, lifestyles. And then it goes on to say that the teacher made an error in judgment and the administration would have placed restrictions upon what the speaker said if they had been allowed to speak at all.
Oh, well.
Oh, Lord. talk.
That's it. Keep them ignorant. Let them find out on their own.
Jesus Christ. And, oh, by the way, if you want to cuss tonight, I tell all my guests that, you know, the seven words that George Carlin says you can't say on the air.
Yeah.
You can say fuck all you want.
Well, I try not to.
Okay, I'm just letting you know that.
I don't live in the Tenderloin anymore. And I've got a corporate job, so I try and weed that kind of vocabulary out.
Well, I kind of have
not that.
That.
You know, not that I'm always successful, but I try. I pop up once in a while. Can I say, oops?
Well, I strive to have some colorful words, but I guess we all have different goals. But anyways, I wanted you to start off by explaining who the hell you are.
Oh, wow.
I know you are a fabulous singer for Glamazon. Am I correct? Not anymore. Well, you were.
Yeah. Now, Glamazon is defunct, or at least I'm not in Glamazon anymore. I've got this corporate 9-to-5, and, you know, I've got some health issues, and, you know, I had my surgery come up a little while ago, and just too much stuff to go on in my life to really dedicate the kind of time that, you know, a professional band needs, and I felt I was holding my partner back, and so I stepped away from the band late last year.
Well, so it didn't have anything to do with, it was more just of a work issue?
It was just a lot of stuff, you know, it just wasn't as much fun for me. We've been doing Glamazon for over 6 years, and it was just not as much fun as it used to be, and I wasn't as driven as my partner. I mean, she was the real talent in the band, the shred mistress. Not that I'm a bad singer or anything, but, you know, I have a lot more going for me than just the music. And it was just time to pursue other things. I'm finishing up this novel I'm working on, and there's my autobiography, and, you know, I've got a lot of different creative outlets.
Well,
and the music was just getting in the way of my life.
So you're basically concentrating on your writing and
mm-hmm.
other things.
Exactly.
I was reading through your bio, and it says that your number one role model was your mother.
Yeah. Well, Mom was a really strong personality, still is, but she was someone I really looked up to, and I think I really identified, you know, more with her than my father, probably more than my mother intended me to.
Now, did your mother and father divorce? I'm just curious.
Yeah, when I was around 10, then my mother remarried when I was around 12.
I don't know. I sometimes wonder if that has anything to do with it. I had no male role models whatsoever. Well, the ones I did were all drunks.
That doesn't account for my very normal brother and sister, though. They didn't turn out, you know, with substance abuse problems or gender identity problems or minority sexual orientations. They're all pretty much straight and narrow. Really nice people. I mean, they're totally accepting of me. But I don't think it's related to that. I think a lot of this stuff, gender identity and perhaps sexual orientation, might have a biological basis.
Oh, well, I definitely do too. It's just. Just something that kind of hit me when I was reading that. There are a lot of, I don't know. I think sometimes I think it's a mixture of biology and environment. But anyways, that's another show completely.
Yeah.
Your book, The Princess and the Queen. Can you tell us a little bit how that came into being? What was the basis for it and how you came about to write it?
Well, it first started out as sort of a therapeutic romance. It was based loosely on a relationship that I was in back in 92, a relationship that did not end well, and I created characters out of myself and my lover, and it was just sort of a romantic, very twisted romance between a transsexual junkie streetwalker and a lesbian alcoholic stripper. And
So this angel character is based on your partner?
Yeah.
Wow.
And I tried marketing it, but I couldn't get anybody interested in the idea. I mean, the characters were strong, but there wasn't really that much of a story. And so I set it aside for a number of years, and then I thought, you know, the characters are cool. They need a situation, though. There needs to be conflict, and you got to, you know, your classic story. And so I came up with the idea of creating a techno thriller to, you know, shove them into that kind of a plot, and that way they could there could actually be some character development along with the action of the story. And it's shaping up really nicely. I mean, this thing is written to be turned into a screenplay.
Did you you made a comment on your website, which is at glamazon.net.
Mm-hmm.
You made a comment on this story that you said it was a groundbreaking step of rendering a transsexual woman as a sympathetic heroine. Do you think we're ready for that? Do you think society as a whole is ready for that?
Well, I think to some degree we're already seeing a little bit of that. I mean, even though it was 10 years ago, the Dill character in The Crying Game was a sympathetic character. I mean, she wasn't there for a laugh, and she wasn't there as a villain. Let's see, we had Education of Max Bickford. That's a lot more recent. We had the Helen Shaver's character. I saw it on the internet. They're actually casting for a male-to-female transsexual for a television evening drama. Yeah. So
movie of the week.
No, I think it was going to be an actual series. And
really,
the transsexual would be a regular character and not a bit part either. I mean, that was my understanding of the role. I think it's possible. Transgender's making the news a lot. I mean, first you've got this horrible thing that happened to Gwen Arujo up in the San Francisco Bay Area. Then there we've got, like, municipality after municipality passing transgender rights laws. So we're definitely making it in the news. People are going to be interested. And I think that if a transsexual character is carefully drafted and properly presented to a reader, she could be that sympathetic heroine. And so it's just a matter of telling the story well and introducing the character properly, making it believable. And that's what I'm trying to do with this novel.
Okay, now most authors will say, you know, did you base this character on someone real? And they'll say, well, parts of it. I wanted to know if Crystal is, like, totally you.
Well, to a large degree. Her story parallels myself quite a bit. I mean, the only thing that she didn't do was, you know, be in the Air Force for 4 years, but she was out on her own. She got married. She started attending school and went into a computer science degree program. You know, she had this closet cross-dressing thing that went on forever that bothered her, and she started to research while she was in college and found out that it wasn't curable, started to find out she was a transsexual, started, you know, going through transition and living full-time, and that's when she started catching, you know, crap from everybody. You know, total strangers, her schoolmates, her instructors, and dropped out of the straight world and moved to a neighborhood like the Tenderloin in San Francisco, and got caught up eventually in sex work after being discriminated against, in the job search. And then eventually hard drug use to deal with the reality of, you know, being a prostitute and living on the bottom rung of society. So in that respect, the Crystal character is based very heavily on me. The only thing that didn't happen is that I didn't get caught up in this huge, you know, intrigue with, shadowy, government agents and stuff.
I was wondering about that. I was wondering if you, cracked some code.
I'm sorry?
I wondered if you were in some, espionage that we didn't know about.
Oh, no. But, I mean, the point is that her character is, and again, her situation is based very heavily on my own. So it's not improbable because I know it happened.
So it's kind of a look inside you as well as a look inside the story.
Yeah.
You said you said on your website that when you started writing, there were half-assed attempts at creativity, but there was no great drive at first.
Mm-hmm.
Do you find that that's pretty typical? I mean, in how writers are? I mean, or...
I can only speak for myself in that respect. Some people, I'm sure they start writing immediately because they've got something to say, or they envision themselves as a writer, and so they keep trying to write.
So you didn't envision yourself as a writer?
I didn't really have anything to say until I started writing in earnest, and that was when I was in rehab in 88. Then I had a lot to say. I mean, okay, here I am. I'm in... here's the chronology. I first started Transition in spring of 1985, and I was in school. It was the second semester of my second year and computer science program, and left my wife and moved to the Tenderloin, which is like this really seedy downtown neighborhood in San Francisco where it's really cheap to live, and if you don't mind drug dealers and prostitutes.
It sounds like a ranch.
Well, it's definitely a ranch for transgender and transsexual types because there's a lot of us there. That was your initial attraction, that and the cheap rent. And so I'm living there.
Cheap rent and trannies.
Yep, you can't beat that, especially when you're a starving student. It's like I started living full time, and I was getting a lot of crap from people, people on the street, classmates. I had this one, the head of the computer science department was openly smirking at me. I mean, this didn't do a lot for my self-esteem. And what was I talking about? It was terrible. There's a point to this whole thing. I was doing this great setup, and I got caught up in my story. What was the question again? Writing. That's right. My writing. Okay. There we go. I knew there was a thread here.
Blonde moment. Note to listener.
It's been a long day at work in the computer biz. So anyway, the upshot of it is that the transition went badly because I ended my second year of school. I was ready to live full time. The world wasn't ready for me. I was discriminated against in my job search. And I had to pay rent, so I started hooking because that's what all my role models were doing. There was no Lynn Conway, back then, or at least she was living in deep stealth. The only transsexuals I knew were, my fellow sisters in the Tenderloin, and the role models were the ones who were making $100 an hour doing in-call. And so I got caught up in that because I had to pay rent and I had to eat and buy hormones and get electrolysis. And it ended the bad. The more I did that, I got involved in heroin, IV drug use, and it reached a real low in the summer of 86, and I went back to trying to live as a man for 2 years because my life was in such chaos. I blamed it on being a transsexual, rather than all of the drugs that I was doing. And what happened was when I went back to trying to live as a man, that's when I became this hopeless junkie. I ended up in jail. I had a couple visits to the psych ward. I lost my very first computer programming job. It was just, life was not working. And so by summer of 88, I went into a Veterans Administration rehab. and fully intending to get clean and sober. And I thought, okay, I was just going to get clean and sober, and then I would be this well-adjusted, happy guy. Wrong! Thing is when you get clean and sober, you start feeling your feelings again, especially if you've been using, you know, a drug like heroin that, you know, pretty much erases your feelings. And the feeling that came back strongest, this is about a month clean and sober, was that I wasn't meant to be a man. And I realized that if I didn't get back in transition and on hormones again, that I was going to kill myself or go back to being a junkie.
Well,
and so this is the thing, though. This is where the writing comes in. As I'm sitting there in this VA rehab, and there's like all of these ex-GIs around me, and I don't feel like this comfortable discussing my gender issues with them. And the staff, you know, they weren't set up to do any gender counseling. And so I had nothing else to do but write. So I wrote and I wrote and I wrote and I wrote trying to understand myself. And I started with my childhood and worked all the way up to, you know, how I ended up in a rehab. I wrote the first draft of my autobiography in that rehab, hoping that it would, you know, maybe I could exorcise these transsexual demons by writing them out. And I didn't. But, I mean, that was the first time I did any serious writing. And then after that, my writing just started blossoming. Then I had a lot to say.
Well, I read that that you were featured, or you were actually sold one of your articles to The Spectator. Now, number one, what is The Spectator?
The Spectator used to be the Berkeley Barb. It used to be this hippie radical magazine in Berkeley back in the early 70s. And then it became an adult newspaper, and two-thirds of the newspaper are sex ads. Of course, you know, there's a lot of phone sex nowadays, but it was like before that, it was like mostly escort agencies and, you know, girls like myself, you know, transsexuals and regular, you know, genetic women. We put our sex ads in there, and that's how we got customers. And then to make it, you know, respectable, they have, you know, articles in there. News items, point of view, kind of just, you know, real journalism. And so I started contributing to Spectator in 91, and it's been a while since I've contributed anything, but as far as I know, I'm still on the masthead. Actually, I should probably send them something about, you know, the surgery I just had. I'm sure they'd buy that story, along with pictures.
So did you have somebody with you to take pictures?
I'm sorry?
Did you have somebody with you to take pictures? Are you saying pictures from the surgery?
Actually, there are no pictures of the surgery in progress, but there's a few pictures of healing up and pictures of, you know, the staff, the surgeon, and whatnot. And I'm sure what the Spectator want would be pictures of the actual results of the surgery.
Really?
Oh, yes. That kind of magazine.
So people just buy this for the articles, right?
You're being facetious, aren't you?
A bit. Well, I need to go to break.
Oh, okay.
So, but I've got something a little special for you. After a little commercial, I'm going to play a little something for you. You know, I figured you'd like this. So we're going to go to break, and you're listening to TransistorRadio.com, part of the Outlet Radio Network. We'll be back in just a few.
www.outletradio.com. Community voices on the World Wide Web.
Check that brother out over there. Shut. He's digging in the dirt. Ew, that's nasty. What's up with this Bosco?
Look like he putting stuff in the dirt.
Yo, what's he got?
I think they're
flowers?
Flowers? What's up with this brother?
Wait, yo. He's cool, right, man. He's tagging up.
Nah, son. He's untagging.
He's erasing your tag.
Shut up, man.
Yo, this dude is whack.
Punked out mama's boy.
Hold up. Who the fine honeys he went though?
Yo. I think that's my girl.
And that's my sister, man.
And that's definitely Halle Berry.
Hey, what's this cat got that we don't got?
Want to get respect? Give respect. Start with your community. Work to make it a better place to live, and people will notice. To get involved, call 1-800-722-TEENS or check on the web at weprevent.org. The sooner you get started, the sooner stuff gets done. A public service message from McGruff, the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the Ad Council.
This isn't a feud, but I just like that song, damn it. You're listening to Transistor Radio. This is Marty's Tea Party, and tonight we have a wonderful guest, one of my trans heroes.
Oh, thank you. Heroines, please.
Well, whatever. Now, I think it was you who made the comment that said, you're a third gender, right?
What a wonderful segue into what I want to talk about. Yeah, you know, it's pretty complex how I identify. I really clung to the third gender identity for a long time because back when I was originally cleared for surgery back in 1991, I was turned down. Not because I wasn't a good candidate or wasn't psychologically ready, but because I have the HIV virus. And back in 1991, that's what they did, was they turned you down because everybody was, well, very understandably afraid of that virus. And, oh, God, that really crushed me, you know, to be, like, stuck in between the genders here. I mean, you know, to have a female identity and to have, you know, male genitalia, it really sucked. And
to put it lightly.
I'm sorry?
To put it lightly.
Big time. What saved me, though, is that was around the time that Kate Bornstein started talking about, you know, this third gender concept. And that really saved me because, I don't know, just the phrase woman with a penis kind of sticks in my craw just a little bit. I mean, you know, that's just for me. It just, intellectually, I couldn't get my
hands around it.
Embrace it. And so, I mean, obviously, you know, I can only put an M or an F on my driver's license, so I have an F there, and I definitely identify as she. You know, she is much, much closer to my truth than he. But, you know, because of my anatomical situation, I really clung to that third gender thing because that kind of gave me a place to go.
Do you now not subscribe to that, or do
I think it's still valid. I mean, I subscribe to it a little bit for myself. I mean, you know, I've just had my surgery. Actually, it was on Halloween this year.
Ooh.
And, yeah, I know, isn't that perfect? You know, the pagan New Year. I subscribe to it in that, you know, if I've got a prostate gland, I've got XY chromosomes, well, probably XY chromosomes. You know, I have a whole history of growing up being socialized as a male and, you know, thinking of myself as a male. And even if I could go deep stealth and, you know, I couldn't erase all that. So in that sense, I am to some degree third gender. However, my self-identity is woman, and, you know, I've got, you know, most of the parts now, or it looks like I've got most of the parts, and that's, I don't really identify as third as much, you know. I'd much rather keep my life simpler and not get on some sort of a political or activist kind of, you know, I'm a third gender, you know, kind of thing. I'd much prefer to be a woman, but, you know, I still keep in mind that I am a transsexual woman. And for the longest time, you know, during that whole 10-year stretch in between the time I was turned down and I finally had my surgery over 3 weeks ago, I would lie or change the subject. You know, if anybody asked me if I'd had the surgery, I'd find some way to deflect the question because I felt a great deal of shame. I felt like having the penis invalidated my womanhood somehow, and I would lie about it, or I would find some way to, you know, just change the subject or make somebody think I had, you know, some kind of coy answer. And because, you know, I felt like a failure as a transsexual and as a woman, you know, even though it wasn't my fault I was turned down. Well, I guess it was my fault. I mean, I'm the one that chose to start doing IV drugs. And so, I mean, in that sense, it was my, you know, the responsibility lies with me that I didn't get the surgery. But, you know, now that's all over. I mean, it's like, you know, they invented protease inhibitors, and I'm very healthy and have been for many years. And there's this, the most fabulous SRS surgeon in the world, Toby Meltzer. Does take on HIV positive patients as long as, you know, they're otherwise healthy, and he did a great job. I'm a very, very happy customer.
Now something about your surgery. I've heard many people discourage having an orchiectomy beforehand, but I saw on a post today that you did have an orchiectomy.
Yeah, back in 1991, I was, you know, of course, taking mega doses of female hormones to counteract the testosterone that my body was producing. Plus, I was taking HIV medication, and I didn't know it at the time, but it turns out I also have hepatitis C. So, like, my liver was getting this triple whammy, and I was in serious, serious trouble. And so my doctor says, like, should discontinue all that stuff. Well, not wanting to, you know, revert back to male, I went and got an orchiectomy.
Did that affect your surgery at all?
No. There is a misconception that, you know, without testicles in there, the scrotal sac will atrophy and there won't be enough skin left. And then they're gonna have to take a graft, and that wasn't the case. Now, part of it, you know, the concern is that the surgery won't be done properly, that, you know, there'll be scarring, bad scarring from the orchiectomy, and that could, you know, that could cause the need for a graft. But the surgeon that did me did an excellent job. When I went. I flew up to Portland for a consult with Dr. Meltzer last December. And it's just, you know, he found the orc scar and he said this shouldn't be a problem at all. There's plenty of skin there. And I finished dilating about 10 minutes before I called you for this, you know, tonight. And I've got about a good 6 inches of depth. So it's a myth that a poorly done orchiectomy. It could cause, you know, the need for a graft. But, hey, if you've got, you know, liver problems, if you have some kind of problems taking hormones, I would book my orc, like, tomorrow.
See,
I totally quit taking hormones, and within a year, I had undergone such a transformation. My features softened out completely. Of course, I'd already had my electrolysis completed by then, but it's like I began passing like crazy. You know, about a year after I had my orc.
I'm just curious, what medicines did you take after your orchiectomy?
I took a small dose of Premin for a while, but I eventually discontinued everything because I didn't really need it. I've had, it's been over 10 years, it's been 11 years since I did that, and no signs of osteoporosis or any other complications from that. So, I mean, I'm going to be watching it in the future, as I get older, but, if I need to go on a tiny dose of HRT, I will. But from now, there has been no complications. And I'm just happy as a clam at high tide.
Well, we are going to go to our last break. And we're going to go into it with a little Glamazon.
Yay!
Yay! After we have our little introduction to the station for everyone out there. You're listening to Transistor Radio. This is Marty's Tea Party, and we'll be back in a moment.
What I learned from video games. If you think you got all the cherries, jump again. There's more. Pick up the Demon Skull in level 2. You'll need it for protection later. Dude, worst case, power command B. Jump the monkey.
Teenagers can do more than master video games. Click on WePrevent.org and learn how to make a difference. Tutor, mentor, volunteer. Help change your community and change the way the world sees you. Click on WePrevent.org or call 1-800-722-TEAMS.
A message from Corrupt the U.S. Department of Justice, the Crime Prevention Coalition of America, and the Ad Council.
Teardrop, you're crying.
This is like my favorite song of all time. Welcome back, everyone. It's another fabulous edition of the Tea Party.
There's hope when our heart dreams of love.
Well, we're almost finished with this fine interview with Christine Beatty. I wanted to finish up by talking about, you talked about a lot on your website about elitism in the community.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that was a conversation that I had with Kate Bornstein. God, how long was that? At least 8 years ago. And we were talking about this sort of, I guess you could call it a pecking order in the community, with post-operative transsexuals being at the top of the pyramid, and then beneath them were pre-ops that, hadn't quite scraped together, the money and the cash, but were on the brink of it, and then beneath them were the ones that, that just couldn't quite get the letter written or just couldn't get the money together, but by God, at least their heart's in the right place. And then you got these transgenderists, non-operative, I never want to have surgery types, and oh God, and beneath them are the cross-dressers, and it's like, and it's like this peg, and then you get down, and then the cross-dressers, they look down on the post-operative transsexuals, as being these mutilated freaks. I mean, you've got this whole cycle of people looking down on each other, and I look at it like this. If I'm secure in my identity, if I've got self-esteem, if I love myself, I don't need to look down on anybody else. I mean, all of those classifications, if you were, they're just, different options for living in the world, and whatever, whatever makes somebody happy, whatever they're comfortable with is what's right for them. I certainly wouldn't want, anyone to tell me what's right for me, and so I'm not going to look down on somebody for doing what's right for them. Although one of my big pet peeves is transsexuals that, that like they do the rest of the deal, they do electrolysis and, work on their image or anything, and they don't do anything about their voice. And you meet them, and they say, "Hi, my name's Susan. Put her there." It's like, no, please. I mean, there's some great websites out there. Melanie Ann Phillips has got a website and a video tape for working on your voice. And I've got two other websites on my own website, that deals with working on your voice. I mean, I'm kind of letting my guard down a little bit here for this interview, but when I'm on my job, when I'm representing my company, I will kick it up an extra notch just so they know that, what do you mean your name's Christine? You know, it's like, you know, when I'm presenting myself out there, when I'm meeting somebody new, and I don't want to flip them out, I will just crank up, you know, the stuff that I learned from Melanie Ann's VHS tape, just kick it up another notch, and I pass just fine on the phone. So it's, you know, it just bugs me when somebody doesn't even make the effort. I mean, otherwise, they look good, they pass, they blend in pretty good, and then they just, oh, come on, just work on your voice.
Becky in the chat room. Actually, I'm having a little microphone trouble right now. Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you.
Oh, I can't hear myself. But
something about Becky in the chat room.
Becky in the chat room says, "Hey, Marty, do we know any trans women who need to work on their voices?" Ha, ha, ha.
Now, of course, Becky's not talking about you.
Becky, fuck you. Now, I can say that. Something else that I wanted to cover before we leave this fine establishment is news groups. That's kind of where I was introduced to you. My question to you would be, why in the fuck do you post to news groups? They are so... there's always flame wars going on with Diane Ahrens and...
Well, let's not get into any names or personalities.
Well, I'm not saying anything about any of those people in particular.
Well, I know what you're saying, but there are definitely some people in those groups that... they're angry, or they've got, you know,
issues.
They're depressed, or they've got some kind of mental problem, maybe. I mean, I'm not going to...
Well, I'm not trying to cast any aspersions.
Well, the point is, it's like, unfortunately, that's all they've got, you know, and that's how they cope with their problems as they go in those places. The other side is that there are some very supportive people in those news groups, too, and I got a lot of good information. You know, prior to my trip to Portland, and I've got some good information since I've come back. So, there are some negative personalities, but there's some good information there, too. And even better are the E-lists, like the Yahoo E-groups and whatnot, where it's more moderated, and, you know, those are a lot more supportive. So.
Well, and that's what I find, is that so many of these news groups, I mean, Lord, you wish that you could moderate them.
Yeah.
I mean, because anybody that's new that comes to them, I mean, it's like, please. You know, I mean, they scare them off within two or three posts.
Unfortunately.
But anyhow, I was just curious because you're so smart and so...
Well, you notice I don't post that much there anymore. I just, like, poke my head in once in a while, and I have a lot of people filtered out, so I have to read them in the first place.
Well, you know, you could always go to transadvocate.com, and you could post there. There's a nice message board there.
Okay, well, I will keep that in mind. Well, we need to wrap this up here soon. I got to get back to some stuff here. Is there anything else?
No, I think that's it. I think it's about time we leave this fine thing that we call the Tea Party, and we're going to go out with one of the bands that you really like, I take it.
Oh, yeah.
We're going to go out with Van Halen.
Well, thanks a lot for having me on, Marty. I really appreciate the opportunity, and once again, www.glamazon.net is my website, and I'm going to be revamping that. There's a lot more stuff about transition in there, and a lot more autobiographical, and even more helpful links, and just great information. It's already a good website now, but look for, in 2 weeks, look for it to be an incredible website.
Well,
Glamazon.net.
You know, I got to reading part of your synopsis on your book, and I was like, I cannot read this anymore because I want to read the book.
Well, I'm going to start. Look for me to be marketing that. You know, I'm hoping to get it marketed and sold early next year. So,
well, we'll look for that, and I'll send you a copy to autograph.
Okay.
All right. Well, we are out of here. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Marty.
Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was Christine Bay. She just hung up there.
If you want to give us a call.
Lord have mercy. I need to learn how to work the equipment. If you want to make a comment, it's too late. So join us tomorrow night when you can call in all night long. You can listen to this and rebroadcast at transistorradio.com, or you can go to outletradio.com and click on listen. I'll see you tonight, or tomorrow night, actually. An hour from now, it'll be tonight, maybe someplace. Nighty night.
Lesbian, bisexual, transgender. Experience the power of one voice on the Outlet Radio Network at www.outletradio.com. Featuring community talk, news, and music from independent broadcasters.
So much fun this morning in the shower when you punched me in the windpipe and took my candy cigarette.
One network, one voice. The power of one. The Outlet Radio Network.